Welcome to the RSB Cast. I'm Matt Waldman with the Rookie Scouting Portfolio. And let's see, you know, the past 2 to 3 weeks, I've had joining me Dwayne McFarlane of the RSP and Fighting Chance Fantasy Football. He and I have been going over projections for the 2019 NFL season, and we've been just having a lot of fun really just talking about where we are with these players at this time of the year. So it would be, I thought it would be fun to continue bringing Dwayne on during the summer months here while we have mini camp to cover as many of the teams as we can. So this week we're going to do Philadelphia, Kansas City, and Green Bay. Dwayne, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Matt. Thanks for having me on. Always excited to talk football, as you know.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and we've been having a good time doing this. So let's just kind of get right into it here. Philadelphia, you know, this is a team that, you know, you look at them adding DeSean Jackson, then they drafted J.J. Arcega-Whiteside. You still have Alshon Jeffrey and Nelson Agholor in the mix, at least for now. And you add in Zach Ertz and Dallas Goedert. And then, of course, the free agent, Jordan Howard, and in addition to Miles Sanders. And a lot of people feel like this team is absolutely stacked and it's going to be a very difficult offense to contend with. Where are you with Philadelphia?
Yeah, I tend to be, you know, of a similar, you know, mind frame, honestly. You know, looking at what Doug Peterson has done in his first few seasons with the team, I'm a fan of that. I love the tempo that he brings to the offense. I would say I'm more positive than I am negative on Carson Wentz. You know, I certainly have a few questions still with Carson Wentz, but, you know, we saw an incredible season 2 years ago. He was again good last season before the injury. And then now, like you said, if you think about the additions this offseason, you know, starting with DeSean Jackson, and I think that was a huge element that was actually missing last year for the Eagles passing attack. You know, their intentions were to have Mike Wallace available, right, and have him stretching the vertical elements of the field to open things up underneath. And that just didn't pan out. You know, Wallace was injured. Then they tried to replace him, you know, with some younger guys that definitely had some speed, but they just couldn't get consistency at that position. And I think for this offense that runs a lot of horizontal type route combinations, having someone that can vertically, you know, push, you know, safety coverage off the top is actually really big. I think that helps a lot in the yards after catch area, you know, because you're creating more separation between that next level of defenders and the receiver that just caught the ball. So I think DeSean Jackson, you know, we'll get more in a minute. We can get more into what we think he's going to do from a, you know, projections perspective. But I think what he does for the overall offense, you know, is huge. And like you said, you know, the rookies that they brought in, you got J.J. Arcega-Whiteside in the second round. You know, I don't, you know, when I look at Arcega-Whiteside, you know, I've watched 4 or 5 of his games. You know, I probably haven't watched near as much as you, Matt. But what I noticed, something he really, really is good at that I would probably have to argue based on everybody I've watched, there's nobody better at boxing out. That guy is like, right. I feel like I'm watching a post player in basketball. It reminds me, and I don't, this is going to sound bad to listeners. I don't mean to say he's going to have this kind of career, but it reminds me of what Tony Gonzalez used to do, you know, right. And what he would do in the red zone. Now, I think there are a lot of other areas to Whiteside's game that, you know, still have to be developed. But when I think about him as a tool in the toolbox this year for an offense that can be very diverse, man, I think it's another weapon that they can use. And then Miles Sanders, you know, we'll have to see. I know he's hurt right now, so I'm a little concerned, you know, anytime you have rookies that aren't contributing early on. Now, it's still early. It's just mini camp and OTAs. But if by the beginning of, you know, training camp, you know, his hamstring issue isn't better, you know, I think he could start to fall behind. Of course, they also added Jordan Howard. We didn't mention him. So Jordan Howard, I think, is, you know, somebody that's a very underrated, you know, running back in the NFL. And I know in, you know, when specifically fantasy circles, some people, I think, you know, frown upon him, and it's because of his lack of, you know, receiving ability per se. So I think that Miles Sanders, what I do like about him is he is somebody that could potentially play all three downs. And that's something that whenever you read the transcripts post-draft from this team, which is a time when I think you can find a lot of honesty, that's something they really, they liked about Miles Sanders is the fact that, you know, they're really good at bringing in three different backs that do three different things, but they thought that Sanders could give them the versatility of being able to do all three, but also give maintain element of surprise from a play calling standpoint so that defenses aren't keying on the back that they're bringing into the backfield as to whether it's a pass or a run.
Okay, so let's go back and start with DeSean Jackson, because when I look at this offense, Dwayne, one of the things that I noticed 2 years ago with Carson Wentz is that he absolutely sucked during the first few games of the season. when I say that, Eagles fans are going to be mad at me, but what I mean by that is that the offense wasn't well matched for him. That's probably a more accurate way to put it. Because where Carson Wentz sucked in college and where he still sucks at Philadelphia is that he can't throw the deep ball. I don't mean like 30, 35 yards down the field from a standstill, or where he's running around playing the playground game and making people miss and then throwing it 50, 60 yards in the air over the head of the defense where a receiver can track it like an outfielder. I'm talking about where, professional quality throws that we would normally look at where, say, Drew Brees could throw it 50 yards in stride, or Matt Ryan in the 40 to 45 yard range. Carson Wentz he never seems to be able to find the actual accuracy range he needs to for the receiver to catch it in stride from 45 yards to 60 yards in that range of the field. So when I look at DeSean Jackson, I have him as a player who's going to average close to the same yards per catch yards per reception that I saw from him at Tampa Bay last year. I have him at close to, at almost 17 and a half yards per catch, which is a pretty healthy number. And I have him catching about 55 passes for about 960 yards and 6 touchdowns. But I feel like I'm taking a leap of faith to give him this strong of production. It's not because DeSean Jackson's bad. I just don't think Carson Wentz is good at throwing the deep ball. It's why they use this, horizontal passing attack. It's why they have him, with a quick passing game where he doesn't have to, drop 5-7 steps, reset his feet, move away from the pressure, and keep his feet in a position where he can and then throw it in rhythm downfield at 40, 50 yards. Because when he has to do that, the Eagles are going to lose, because that's just what Wentz is bad at. He's very good at so many other things. I mean, give him that quick passing game, and you were right. He was great when they could keep him in that type of a, 20 to 30 yard range, quick hitting passes, horizontal routes. And then if he needed to scramble and play a little Ben Roethlisberger ball, early Ben Roethlisberger ball, he's very good at that. But just talking about Jackson in general and how he fits in here, I mean, have you seen similar things with Wentz as a deep ball passer? And do you think that maybe, my leap of faith with Jackson doing this well is kind of more around that they're going to try and hit him quickly, because we know Jackson can get early separation. So they can hit him at 25, 35 yards and he has a 3 yard lead on somebody. Yeah. It's still going to go for 50, 60, 70 yards with him in stride. But I'm hoping that the routes that they hit with Jackson, that Wentz can hit him early enough so that he doesn't have to wait and then screw up his own game in terms of trying to, because the longer he has to wait in rhythm to throw a ball, the worse he is.
Yeah. I haven't watched probably near as much, as you, and I don't have probably quite the eye, but what I've noticed, when I do watch Carson Wentz is, whenever there are routes where, like deep crossers and things like that, when I say deep, 20 yards is still deep to me. Yeah. He seems to do fine on those. Where I have noticed that there is some struggle is the literal, down the sideline vertical throw. Inside the hashes seem to be a little better, which I think they are for most quarterbacks, but we're trying to push the outside and the vertical boundary together. I think that's one of the more difficult areas to have, continuous accuracy, if you will, versus kind of, it comes and goes. And so, yeah, I could totally see that. I think for me, with DeSean Jackson, I like the idea of what you said. I do think they will try to get him involved some underneath as well, because that is their game. But I think what he brings, even if Wentz lacks the ability to execute it, the defense still has to respect it. Right. Because Jackson is so fast, he is so good. And even if Wentz only, say, hits you know, 30% of those throws where maybe an elite guy hits 40%, because the further we go down the field, we both know, I mean, the completion percentages start to tank anyway. Like Aaron Rodgers in his career year of 2011, you know, hit 50% down the field. You know, Patrick and Mahomes actually, last year hit 48. That's elite.
Yes, at that level. Yes, I mean, field. We're talking, I wouldn't be surprised if Carson Wentz hitting somewhere between 15 and 20 at best. You know, in terms of that range. So anyway, yeah, I'm totally with you.
Yeah. So I think the bigger key though, is just what the fact that it's always, you know, a threat. It's always a threat that, you know, the defense has to game plan for, they have to be concerned with it. It creates a lot of scenarios where they've got to dedicate two guys to DeSean Jackson, no matter what, even if the rest of the guys are running horizontally. I just like the matchups that creates across, you know, the rest of the offense. Looking back at Wentz, I just looked real quick. And yeah, you're right. So 2016 was his big breakout year, and his completion percentage was below the league average on passes 20 yards or longer. It was 32.8%. Then 2017, it got up to 38, and then it was 38, which is it was 38 again last year. That's slightly above average. Now, this doesn't break the stats I'm using. It doesn't break it down. Like I know
into past 40 yards.
Yes, you create bigger buckets, different buckets, which I think is the smart way to do it. This is all just based off of the 20 and over, right? Which kind of goes back to what you said a minute ago, though. That is a pass Wentz can hit if he can get it to him in the 20 to 25 yard window on the right kind of routes. Based on the way the offense is built, that's really more what their deep attack is built around, is those kind of routes versus just, you know, pure vertical. You know, just trying to take shots down the field. I think they're more calculated.
Yeah, that makes total sense. So what do you have for Jeffrey? I mean, not Jeffrey, for Jackson this year.
Yeah, I've only got him at 14%, you know, of the targets, but I've got his yards per catch at a 16. You know, I think you said a 17. So I've got him at 84 targets. That is 48 catches. So catch rate of 58, because he will work down the field more on some of his routes. You know, that's the lowest catch rate of any receiver I have on the team, but it's mostly due to the fact that I do believe he will work down the field more than the rest of the guys. So I've got him at 48 catches, 771 yards, and 5 touchdowns. So that's 84 targets, 48 catches, 770 yards, and 5 touchdowns.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, we're pretty close. I have him a little bit more in receptions and yards and a little bit more in touchdowns, but marginally so. He might be, you know, somewhere between 5 to 12 spots higher on the board for me.
To me, it's an offense that's built to be, you know, very evenly spread. You know, Zach Ertz is going to lead the way, but I think there's even an argument for Ertz this year. Can he continue to gobble up, you know, 27-28% of the target share as they continue to add more and more weapons? And they've clearly, you know, they're thinking about all the different ways that they can script games based on opponents, is what I think this tells me. I mean, the diverse, you know, talent that they've brought in, and they've done it in the right way because they've built their offensive line. You know, it's good. They've got a young quarterback that they love, and now they're giving him all of these different weapons. So for me, it's hard outside of Ertz to really, you know, be able to give anyone up around 20% of the targets, just knowing the way the offense works. What are your thoughts?
So how many targets do you have for Ertz right now?
I've got him at 24%, which is 144. This is a high tempo offense. They'll run the most plays in the league. This team, Frank Reich and then, you know, Arizona with Cliff Kingsbury, one of those three teams will probably lead the league in plays this year. Doug Peterson is consistently in the 1,050 range on plays. So even when you give somebody in an offense like that, you know, you don't give them the 26-27%, which is what, you know, elite pass receivers get. Even Ertz at a 24% gives him 144 targets.
Yeah, I have Ertz at 156 targets. And let's see, what's that at for what I'm – let's see. Probably a target percentage, which is too high, but more like 30% range for what I'm looking for. But I have him at 156 targets, and I'm looking at a, you know, close to a career year for him still. I guess for me is that I'm still, while I like DeSean Jackson, I like what he can do. I agree with you. I think Ertz, you know, that range of saying that he's going to be the target leader – is the safe bet on that. And that means that Dallas Goedert, while he's going to be helpful in terms of being kind of a, you know, a constraint play type of guy, a guy who's going to be able to be that counterpunch for this offense and get some easy big plays out of the fact that the team that opposing teams have to focus on Ertz, Jeffrey, Jackson, and then the running game, you know, that will help out, and we'll see more talent, you know, we'll see Dallas Goedert's talent once again this year, but it just won't really take that next step in terms of volume because of Ertz.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I've got Goedert at 9%. I mean, Ertz is just, he's really good. I mean, when you watch right. Ertz, I mean, it would be hard if I were a quarterback, and I by no means am one. I can throw the ball about 20 yards on and have any kind of accuracy, Matt, and that's with no one in my face and the stationary target.
We'll see, so, there you go.
But if I had Zach Ertz, just watching him, he's just one of those guys. It's not just about being an athlete. It's not just about, you know, just knowing how to play the position. He puts all of it together. He's always in the right spot. He just seems to be a super smart player. He's always getting separation. You know, he's just a player that, you know, Wentz and this whole offense has grown to, you know, really depend on. I just brought him down a little bit just because, you know, it's like we said, I don't see DeSean Jackson having a huge year, but I think you give a little bit to him that was because Mike Wallace really did nothing last year, right? And even when they brought in Golden Tate, they never really got Golden Tate going, you know. And if Alshon Jeffrey's healthy the whole season, he wasn't last year. Coming into the year last year, he was injured. You know, and then you add Arcega Whiteside, and then you have Goddard. If any of those guys just get a little bit more, I just think it's something where, you know, I prefer to put Ertz around the 24-25% mark just because there's so many other weapons now.
Right. And I think for me, I don't trust Arcega Whiteside right off the bat just because he is a rookie, and you know, he seems to model a lot of what Alshon Jeffrey has right now. So I don't see him like jumping right in. And I mean, where I'm at with him, I think is generous. I think he'll be up there with Dallas Goedert in terms of targets and catches. It'll be fairly, fairly close. Cause I mean, I have Goedert with about 49 targets, Arcega Whiteside at 44. And then the completions for Goedert, 43 and 32 for the rookie. And then they're both in the 450 to 475 yard range in terms of yardage, and then, you know, about 2 to 4 touchdowns for them, low side for Arcega Whiteside, high side for Goddard. But speaking of Jeffrey, you know, Jeffrey worked really hard, I think it was a year before last, on stretching and aligning his body so that he wouldn't deal with repeated issues with soft tissue injuries. And he did a pretty good job, you know, 2 years ago with that. Last year he did as well. He played hurt and he missed some time, but it wasn't due to the same old type of injuries that he was having. So I'm actually optimistic about him having a strong year this year. You know, I have him closer to about 113, 114 targets, 80 receptions, 1,000 yards, about 1,038 yards, close to a 13-yard per catch average and 7 touchdowns. And I have him just behind Ertz in the touchdown department in terms of among the leaders in that. It's going to be, to me, it's Ertz, Jeffrey, Jackson in that order. What do you think about Jeffrey this year?
Yeah, we're very similar. I've got him as the number two target, you know, in the offense. You know, when I work through these projections, you know, that's one of the first things I start looking at, right? Is okay, how does the pecking order work out? And I do have Alshon Jeffrey as second, and I've got him right at 18% of the targets. That's 108 targets. I've got him at 65 catches. So I've got his catch rate at 60%. You know, just because he does get thrown to in a lot of contested situations. So it's not a guy that I've ever seen have, you know, a 65-70% catch rate. So our targets are about the same. I've got his receptions a little bit lower because of that. So I've got him at 65 catches, 13 yards per catch, similar to you. And then I've got him at probably 200 yards less than you. I've got him at 840, but I've got him tied with Ertz as the touchdown leader for the team. I've got them both at 22.5%, which is essentially 8 touchdowns each.
Okay, great. So before we go to Carson Wentz, let's talk a little bit about that ground game. I don't trust Miles Sanders at all. I just don't, you know, for me, ball security is very important. And while it's something that can improve with a player, I'm just not a, when I see a player who has a horrendous ball security track record, like Miles Sanders, someone who even last year when he got, when he improved dramatically in that department, even the dramatic improvement was horrendous. So I need to see proof that this guy can hold on to a football when he takes a hit and when he makes that second effort, you know, when he makes the catch and tucks it, when he takes a step, you know, whatever he does, he needs to prove that he can maintain it. So for me, I just don't trust that, especially when I look at a guy like Jordan Howard, who could play with a, you know, a bum shoulder and get a heavy workload and keep taking hits on that shoulder while carrying the ball with it and not lose the ball. I mean, he's like the exact opposite. They're like opposite backs to me in the sense mm-hmm. of like profile. Like Miles Sanders is flash. He's, you know, he's flashy. I think Jordan Howard is substance. And Miles Sanders may one day be substance, and I think he has the potential to be very good substance, but I think Jordan Howard's the goods. And while I know that people don't love his receiving ability, you also have to think about the system and what he's, where he's going to be used. And I think he'll be serviceable. And you know, I know that you're hearing nice propaganda from the coaching staff that Howard's been able to, that they've been impressed with his receiving skill and they feel like yeah. he's been able to do what they need him to do. And honestly, I haven't seen, maybe it's just me, maybe I haven't watched enough Jordan Howard in terms of, you know, his receiving skill in Chicago, but I really didn't. What's the argument that he's not a good receiver? I mean, have you seen, is there statistically a lot of drops with him? Because I didn't notice like egregious issues with his receiving ability.
Yeah, his catch rate is actually pretty, it's low for a running back. I'm pulling it up right now. But okay. One of the things that I've noticed with him, you know, while I'm pulling this up, that I've noticed when, you know, going back, because what I've been, now that I had my first round of projections done this last 2 weeks, I've essentially been trying to watch four or five games on every team, you know, and more if I can, from the 2018 season. And I did spend a lot of time on the Bears, you know, and eventually we'll do something with them because I wanted to watch Mitch Trubisky mainly. But I spent a lot of time watching Jordan Howard, Tariq Cohen, all those guys. And the thing that I did notice, you know, with Jordan Howard, because if there was one thing that I paid attention to, it really was, you know, around his ability to catch the football. What I noticed was he was fine, like in the swinging, like if you just wanted to swing a ball out to him, you know, in those sort of scenarios, you know, a check down pass, I think he's fine. I think where I saw him just seem, you know, and you would be a better judge than me, but when I watch him, you know, having to work down the field more as a pass receiver, which the Eagles like to do a lot with their backs, their average depth of target to their backs is, you know, it can be a little bit higher than the rest of the league. Now, some of that is based on having a guy like Darren Sproles, right? That knows how to go run those kind of routes, kind of like an Alvin Kamara, those guys. So that was the only thing I noticed, but it's just far as being a guy that, oh, wow, you're my third read because my two mains are covered and that tells me I should check it down to you in the flat. I thought it was fine. You know, I didn't, okay. It wasn't like I saw him dropping balls. I thought, you know, he was serviceable, you know, in that area. I think he's just probably a little more limited as far as, you know, what you can do with him as a receiver outside of that. Good. You know, and when I think about the running game, I think you're dead on. If you look back at what they talked about with Miles Sanders right after the draft, they like his quick strike, you know, is what they, how they put it, their quick strike ability. But just one question to you before I jump into these runners and where I've got them and we can talk through it. You know, I know you spend a lot of time, you know, for the rookie scouting portfolio, you know, breaking down, you know, okay, here are the things that a runner does well or does bad. And these are the things that are really hard to correct. You call them hard fixes, right? Versus easy fix. Where does, you know, the ability to protect the football land in that particular matrix? Is it something you typically see that's easily correctable? Or is it something that when you've seen an egregious problem in college, they just typically don't ever fix that?
No, I mean, it is fixable. I think it's, if I were to, I haven't looked, I'd have to look specifically to see where I've listed that, but I imagine it's somewhere in the moderate, you know, intermediate to difficult range. in terms of security. That now there are certain things about ball security that are easier to fix than others. So, for instance, if you're running with the ball, you know, well away from your frame, that's an easy thing to correct. Mm-hmm. But if you're not tucking the elbow tight in consistent situations and you're not doing that consistently, that may be more difficult because it's a smaller fix that you end up having lapses with on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. And in the NFL, they're just much better at locating that little space between the elbow and your side and just punching that ball loose, whether it's punching it, you know, facing the runner or from behind and hitting the runner from behind. They seem to find a way to do that. And I'd say it's one of the most impressive things I see in terms of the difference between what defenders can do in a college game and what they can do in the pro game. Cause it seems like even your slowest, fattest, you know, tub of lard on the defensive line somehow can pinpoint that like a sniper and get and deliver the shot, you know, whereas in college football, occasionally you'll get a really good DE or linebacker or defensive back. There's like maybe three or four guys on the team who can do it. And then like in the NFL, it seems like your third string reserve can do it, you know? And if he comes on the field, it's like, he'll find a way. He may even do something that looks like a basketball move in the lane to be able to get around and just like find the ball. Just to be able to knock it loose. And it's so funny to see how that happens. So, I mean, I think you're going to see, you know, I think because of that, it is a difficult fix. And it's also difficult. It can be difficult, moderate to difficult, because it can get into a player's head. It's also a psychology thing where when you screw that up and now you stop getting playing time, now sometimes you try to push harder to make bigger plays, to make a bigger impact. And then you end up in situations where when you push harder, you end up having lapses with ball security because now you're trying to twist and turn and contort your body. Or now it's gotten in your head that you're a fumbler and every single player's like, oh, he's the easy mark. Yeah, he's the easy mark and he's the target now. And then it becomes like a feeding frenzy.
I saw that last year with Kenyon Drake, and it was in a game where I can't remember who it was against, but he had fumbled it on the one, you know, and it was to win the game at the end of the game. It ended up going to OT. Maybe it was against Green Bay. I can't remember, but the very next series, you know, Adam Gase did still put him back out there, but he came out, and you see this multiple times after a guy fumbles, you know, and you know, Kenyon Drake's a pretty shifty guy. He was a very monotone. He just put both hands over the ball and just put his head down and thought, just give me 3 yards.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that was the Chicago game.
I think it was. I think you're right. It was the Chicago game. Because Jordan Howard did the same thing at the other end.
Yeah. And what was funny is I think they basically stopped giving Mitchell Trubisky chances to lose the game. And they decided they were just going to run it because how much he gave that up. But I'm sure we'll talk about that later.
Yeah.
But yeah, Jordan Howard, I mean, to me, I think he's the lead back, and I think it's pretty easy this year. I mean, I have Howard at about 250 attempts at about 1,150 yards, a really healthy average because this line's good. It's a very athletic line, and you give a guy like him room to be able to get to the line of scrimmage and hit the hole with his size, and he doesn't have to do anything fancy to get there, or he doesn't have to overcome contact before he gets to the hole, he's going to have a healthy average, even if he's not the fastest guy. I have him at 10 touchdowns, and I have him at about 30 targets, 22 receptions, 150 yards, and no touchdowns as a receiver. But to me, I think that the addition of DeSean Jackson and Arcega Whiteside, and then the increase of what we'll see from Goddard will probably decrease how they use the backs in the passing game. I think we're going to see Howard in that, like you said, that check down role, and that's good enough. I'm going to average him less than 7 yards per catch. I mean, I think he's just basically a guy that go, oh, yep, turn around. There you go. Oh, mm-hmm. Occasional screen pass, that kind of thing. And then when you look at the other backs, I mean, I have Smallwood Actually, I have Miles Sanders second in attempts at about 148 attempts, 629 yards. So he's at about 4.25 yards per carry, 3 touchdowns, about 16 targets, 1 per game, you know, getting about 9 catches for 58 yards, not much more. And the only reason I say that is I just don't think that this team's going to have confidence in him to target him deep if he's, you know, to me, I look at him as a fumbler, and until he proves he's not a fumbler, I'm not treating him like he's I'm not treating him to his potential, because basically, you know, there's a big hole in the road between where he wants to be and where he's starting from. And that big hole is you can't hold on to the ball. So until he paves that over, I'm not treating him like the receiver he can be or the back that he can be. So, you know, after that, that means, you know, I think Wendell Smallwood gets into the act, and I have him at about 87 catches, 364 yards, 3 touchdowns on the ground, and then slightly more targets, you know, about 14 receptions, 115 yards, a couple of touchdowns. I have Smallwood leading the backfield in touchdown receptions with 2. So I'm not expecting a lot from this backfield in terms of catching the ball as much as I am from them running the ball.
Yeah. And I think for, you know, folks that are trying to think about fantasy football, one thing to remember with Doug Peterson, you know, is that he likes to use 3 guys, which you see in your projections. And I think that's smart. I've done the same thing. You know, and it's one of those deals where I'm like, okay, maybe in 2 years or 3 years, I mean, if everything worked out with Miles Sanders, they think he can play all 3 roles. Maybe you see a guy get 60%. You know, Doug Peterson was in Kansas City when they would give Jamaal Charles the ball, you know, as the lead back. But even in those years, Jamaal Charles was just above 50% of the carries. They still had other guys they worked in. It's just that Jamaal Charles was so efficient, you know, with his yards per carry were, you know, up in the 5.5s and in the 6s. And I do think that's what this Eagles offensive line and the offense overall could give you, is a lot of really explosive plays. One thing I wanted to say about Jordan Howard that I found interesting when I was doing my research on him, you know, a lot of people, when they think of Jordan Howard, I think because he's a bigger guy, you know, and he takes punishment and those things, like you said, he also doles it out really well. I think they think of Jordan Howard as not being explosive. And, you know, what I found surprising with Jordan Howard was that in 2016, 8% of his carries were over 15 yards. So his big play ability, it comes in many ways. I think a lot of people get fooled by the small, speedy guys that, you know, show up on ESPN as the guy that jukes out 2 guys, but he still only gets 3 yards. It's about angles. It's about understanding your blocking scheme in front of you. And it's about being in a good situation. And I think Jordan Howard has all 3 of those things. He followed that up in 2017 with a 5% number, which is still really good. You just want your back. If you can have your back between 5% and 6%, and what I've noticed with these backs is really good backs are consistent with that number. Their yards per carry will go up and down because it's all a matter of where do they break those runs. If I break it from my opponent's 10, well, I've only got 10 yards I can go. You know, if I break it from their 20, I can only go 20 yards. If I break it from my 10, if I break it from my 1, like last year, like we saw with Derrick Henry, well, 99 is my upside. You know, so it can inflate yards per carry. But if you kind of peel back one more layer and say, how often is this back capable of breaking, you know, carries 12 to 15 yards or more? It's something that I see actually as pretty predictable from year to year. These guys stay in a range until they finally drop off. And so Howard last year, even though they were very predictable in the way they used him, pretty much when he was in the game, he saw a lot of loaded boxes. Now, last year, he saw less of the loaded boxes. I think it was down to his career low, somewhere like 15%, whereas the year before he saw 43. But it was in a lot of situations where folks expected him to be running the football. So I think with what he'll get with the Eagles is he's going to have a better offensive line. You know, it's a good scheme. I think the element of surprise could still be there. And I think that he's more explosive than people think. Where I actually put these guys is, you know, the pecking order that you laid out is actually the same. Our percentages are just a little bit different. I gave Jordan Howard 40% as the lead back. You probably have him more like around 50 to 55%.
Yeah, I've got about 50.
And I think that's okay. I've got Miles Sanders, and that's the range, you know, because I do ceilings and floors for all of these guys. You know, I've got Jordan Howard's ceiling. I've got it right at 55% of the attempts. So I think that's within the range of outcomes. But I've got him at 40% right now, mostly just because I don't trust Doug Peterson, because he literally loves to deploy three guys. He essentially has a guy that's his first and second down guy. Then he has someone that is like his 2-minute drill person. And then, you know, he's got his kind of jack of all trades, plus someone that'll work in on the receiving work. And so I've got Miles Sanders in that second role, similar to you. I've got him at 35% of the attempts. If he doesn't start practicing, and if obviously now something I'll really be watching in the preseason is any sort of ball security issues or anything, hearing something like that, you know, going on through camp, would obviously be something that would push me to start pushing Jordan Howard more to his ceiling and bringing Miles Sanders more down to his floor. Right now I've got him at 35%. And then the third guy I've got working in is Corey Clement. And it's honestly, it's a crapshoot for me right now. This is something that I'll probably have to revisit as the preseason goes on, as who's going to really be the third guy. Is it Clement? Is it Adams? Is it Smallwood? You know, I think that Smallwood or Clement make more sense, because Adams is more of in the vein of a Jordan Howard. So I feel like Josh Adams is probably out. We'll just have to revisit that one. But very, very similar, you know, from a pecking order as you, just slightly different percentages. I've got Jordan Howard at 8 touchdowns. I still gave him 50% of the touchdowns because I think he'll get that work. I gave Miles Sanders 35%.
Okay, great. Yeah. So, I mean, interesting stuff. So let's finish up with Carson Wentz and we'll move on. I mean, listen, Carson Wentz to me, similar to how I guess I view Miles Sanders, with Miles Sanders, the injury and being a rookie and being a fumbler and trying to be Saquon Barkley when he's not at certain times in his game, I wonder a little bit about, rookies tend to get hurt. They tend to suffer soft tissue injuries. Their bodies aren't quite ready to be NFL players, even when they are top athletes. They don't understand how to prehab in terms of their training. So I look at a guy like Sanders and I just don't see him finishing well. When we get to finishing the season or being able to stay healthy long enough to have consistent looks in the season. So that's kind of where I'm at. So when you look at Carson Wentz, well, I watch how he plays and, you know, he's an unusual player. I know that, you know, Eagles fans who, if any of you are still listening after I said that he sucks in the deep game, you know, and you're not stress eating scrapple and Philly's cheesesteaks, then, you know, you're probably back on here and you understand what I'm saying is that that's his weakness. Another part of his weaknesses in his game is in the pocket. When he doesn't get to run around and run the defense ragged and force some sort of undisciplined play in deep coverage where he can then throw the ball over their head. Because when he has to actually move his feet and keep his feet under his shoulders in rhythm, reset and fire, he looks like some kid who got caught in freeze tag, you know, who's like his legs are in weird positions and he ends up being in awkward places when he gets hit, and he does take hits. And while I love his toughness, you know, he's dealing with multiple injuries over his first few years. And yes, he got a contract extension and and there's a lot of hope there for what he can still do. But I want proof that he can last the season and that he can get better in the pocket. So when I have him here, I have the Eagles quarterbacks, you know, attempting about 573 passes. And I have Carson Wentz missing at least two games. You know, I haven't projected to missing two games. So I have him at 501 attempts, whereas Nate Sudfeld gets 72 attempts. And then Wentz completes about 68% of his passes, a little over 4,050 yards, you know, at about a little over eight yards per attempt, 26 touchdowns, 9 interceptions, and then about 120 yards rushing about, in terms of where he's at. So there's opportunity there because I have, you know, when you look at the receiving totals, I actually have the receiving totals at about 4,600 yards and the rest being made up by Sudfeld in that range, where Sudfeld ends up with another 4 touchdowns, about 580 yards, completing about the similar number of passes and not being much of a running threat. So for me, it's, for fantasy players, I look at Carson Wentz and I think he's a boom-bust player. If he stays healthy, he's going to be a top 10 guy. If he does what he's typically been doing during his career. I think he's going to miss at least two games, and they may be towards a part of the season where you really wish you had him. So he's not a guy that I plan on acquiring in drafts, just because I want proof that he's matured enough with his movement that he can stay healthy and make more efficient plays, rather than doing these crazy contortions like he's in Twister while he's trying to throw and taking hits while that happens. So if he can fix that, we're good to go. But you know, I'll let Eagles fans pick him and go that route until he proves otherwise.
Yeah, I think, you know, when I look at Wentz, I'm much more likely to take him, but it just depends. If we're talking fantasy, it just depends on where he's at. I totally agree that you could be faced with 2 to 3 games where you're going to be without him. I just believe that his upside is really big, just because he arguably has, I would say, one of the top three groups of weapons around him. He has a top five offensive coordinator. He has a top five offensive line. He has a lot of things going in his favor. So even though, you know, I do think there are some warts on his game. You know, for example, last year, I mean, he completed nearly 70% of his passes, you know, despite, you know, some of the issues that he's having. So I don't know how often he has to get to those sort of reads where he's off platform and in weird positions where it really just is enough to hinder him. Now, I certainly think that it can. The year before, he was at 60%. So he jumped nearly, he nearly got to 70 last year. So he jumped 10 points in his completion percentage. The year before, he was at a 62. So I don't know where you have him this year. I have him at 65%, but if he,
I've been higher than you.
Yeah. So I think if he can complete 65% of his passes, and even if he just plays 14 to, you know, 13 games and the games you have him, I think he can be a differentiator. I think if he were to stay healthy all season, I give him the upside that he could hop into the top three or four quarterbacks, but it's because of all those other things I said. I think Carson Wentz is not, he's not probably an elite quarterback, like just like what you're saying. I think he's a good quarterback and he's got his strengths and he's got his weaknesses. But when I put the rest of it together, you know, I don't have many other quarterbacks on my board because I put all this stuff together where I can see it all laying together in context. You know, I'm sitting here looking, there's not another quarterback on my whole board that has that many things going for them.
Yeah. So, and I can see that. And it's funny when you look at this team, because you know, Wentz to me is a player who the scheme really fits to his skills, which in a dramatic way, I think all teams try to fit their scheme to the skills of their players if they're doing it right. But I think he's the most dramatic example of that. But then I look at like Jeffrey, and I don't think Jeffrey's a complete route runner. I think he has a certain skill set. DeSean Jackson has a better skill set all around than what's used, that he's used for. But part of it is that you don't really want to throw inside to DeSean Jackson because he's, you know, he's basically, you know, five toothpicks with a head on it that runs really fast when it comes to, you know, when it comes to how he looks on the field. So you don't want to see those splintered up when he takes a hit. And the same thing with Aguilar, you know, and then with Arcega Whiteside, I think he's a better route runner than portrayed. He's a rookie. So, and even Ertz, like Ertz is a fine receiver. He's an okay blocker. You know, but at the same time, it's interesting because I think this whole team is a bunch of guys who aren't as multidimensional as some of the better players at each of their positions or some of the best players at each of their positions. But they all serve a purpose in this offense. And I think Doug Peterson's done a masterful job of being able to make this offense hard to predict and hard to defend, even though these players aren't like, you know, Alshon Jeffrey isn't Julio Jones in terms of route running, you know. So you look at Zach Ertz and I'd say, I'll take Travis Kelce, you know, 9 days out of 7, you know,
So that's a good percentage of the time.
I would say it is, right? You know, so too many cheese curds for me in Green Bay this past weekend. But that's kind of the thought. And I know I sound like I'm hating on the Eagles. And if you're a diehard Eagles fan, I think I am. But it's just that it's a fascinating team to me because I do think this is a team with a lot of skill, a lot of little hidden, like, I think, I don't want to say they're overrated because they're not. The offensive line's great and everything fits together well. But this is an example of a team where I think players all get too much credit individually for what they are. Whereas if they were on other teams with other schemes, you would, teams wouldn't be able, wouldn't take advantage of them as well as the Eagles do. So it's a fascinating team for me
from a
scouting perspective.
Yeah, I totally agree. But I think when you combine the things together, it's a match made in heaven with what Doug Peterson does and the way. And you see Frank Reich, you know, we'll eventually talk about the Colts. He's doing similar moves. You know, Devin Funchess is going to now play the Alshon Jeffrey role. They've brought in Paris Campbell to play the Nelson Aguilar role. And I actually like Paris Campbell in that kind of role. I think he's got a lot of upside in it, you know. But then you got T.Y. Hilton, who can do everything, including some of the things DeSean Jackson does. You know, so I think it's about a scheme. I think you've got a solid quarterback. And when you put it all together and the way that they make it work, it all complements one another. It's very good complementary football. To your point, Alshon Jeffrey, if we were to sit here, if our show today was about ranking, you know, the top 15 wide receivers in the league, Alshon Jeffrey's probably not going to make it into either one of our lists as one of the top 15 guys. He might, you know, I mean, that's probably getting down into his territory, probably top 20. But at the same time, you know, when you talk about how a lot of these guys may get more credit than they deserve and it's based on the scheme, well, think about it. Doug Peterson treats them that way. He doesn't give any one of them, you know, all of the targets. He basically has set this scheme up where they're all going to get between, you know, 15 and 20%, except for Ertz, right? And a lot of that comes to third downs and being able to work inside and a lot of the things he does. You know, it's just, you just get better matchups there than you do a lot of times at receiver. But, you know, when I think about it, it's one of those where I totally agree. I wouldn't rank any of these position players, you know, to be in the top against, you know, a lot of their other league mates besides Ertz. But at the same time, it all comes together nicely, like you said.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've spent almost 50 minutes on one team. So we're going to move the Green Bay Packers to the back burner here and we'll spend the other half of this show, I think, on the Kansas City Chiefs, and we'll just end up doing two this time, if that sounds all right with you.
That's fine.
So, all right. So, you know, moving on to those Chiefs, I mean, this is an interesting situation because obviously we don't know if Tyreek Hill's going to play in Kansas City or play a full season if he does, or not miss any time at all. It could be all three, but, you know, potentially all three or very little time. It's probably unlikely that he won't miss any time at all. Mm-hmm. But, you know, but he will. There's a real possibility that he could play most of the season. Sammy Watkins seems to be in the best shape of his life, and he's worked with the Chiefs staff, and they seem to have helped him understand how he needs to prehab and train. So he's moving around well, and if he can put together a full season, we've seen what he's capable of. Then you have, you know, Mecole Hardman, the rookie, who has that kind of, you know, that kind of speed that Tyreek Hill brings to the table. It's just that he like Hill entering the league as a raw player. And while none of us would have expected Hill to become a great player in terms of how fast he's learned, you know, none of us should expect the same from Hardman either. But it's possible in the same way it was possible for Hill, I suppose, entering in it from this, you know, perspective. And then you still have guys like, you know, with Kareem Hunt gone, you've got Damian Williams set to take over the role, but there's Carlos Hyde, who I think was a bit of a victim of circumstance more than it was that he slowed down. Then you have Darwin Thompson and, you know, James Williams, who are a pair of rookies who offer promise in the passing game, and then maybe a little more for Thompson we can talk about later. And of course, you have Travis Kelce, the just, you know, probably the best tight end in the league, or at least, and if you don't want to argue about it, one of the top three tight ends in the league. So it's you know, and then we talk about the league MVP and the and offensive player of the year last year, Patrick Mahomes. And, you know, when you look at all of these situations that are kind of up in the air, the question becomes, how far is he going to regress? And if he doesn't regress, how do you justify that he's going to, you know, have similar numbers, if not build on them, when there's so much up in the air with the passing and running game?
Right. Yeah. And I mean, this offense last year, I mean, not that anyone here needs us to tell them it was amazing, but when you come, I think it's the perfect marriage, you know, of Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes. Andy Reid, what he essentially got to do was run a system that he's ran, you know, for a long time. And he's definitely made his tweaks to it. But if you look at Andy Reid's system over the course of the years, you know, only about 50% to slightly under 50% actually come from passing yards in the air. It's an offense built to create a lot of yards after catch. You know, so it's typically, you know, 50% of it comes through the air. The other 50% is yards after the catch. If you look at the Alex Smith years, you know, typically they're around 47, 45, 46% of their passing yards came through the air. 55, 54, 53% were coming through run after the catch. Essentially what you've done now, if typically whenever you have a quarterback that you see their yards per attempt jump, you know, up like you've seen, you know, with Patrick Mahomes last year, what you'll see a lot of times is a lot of it is yards in the air, but it wasn't for Patrick Mahomes, despite, you know, Andy Reid seeing his largest yards per attempt in his career. Now, Andy Reid has coached for a very long time. He's coached in a lot of really good offenses. But last year, 8.8 yards per attempt. The year before, it had been 7.9. The previous high before that, you go all the way back to Philadelphia in 2006, he had a 7.9 yards per attempt. Right. But the what's interesting to me about it, Matt, is the fact that it still was at only 50% of the yards are in the air. What that tells you is now all they're doing is everything, you know, is still created, you know, to also get yards after the catch, but the receivers are catching it further down the field. So it's just a nightmare for defenses to deal with. So now instead of like a 3 or a 4 yard drag or a slant, you know, it's 5, 6, or 7 because Mahomes can throw with the same accuracy into those windows that other quarterbacks, you know, throw into shorter windows. And it's just an amazing blend of these two things coming together. So I do think that Mahomes will regress, you know, just because it was so crazy. So one of the things that's really tough to keep up last year, his touchdowns per attempt, 8.6%. I'm going to name 7 quarterbacks since 2007 that have done that number or better. They are Aaron Rodgers, Deshaun Watson, drumroll, wait for it, Nick Foles in Philadelphia under who? Chip Kelly. Patrick Mahomes last year, Peyton Manning in Denver in 2013, Russell Wilson in 2018 with Seattle, and then Tom Brady in 2007. Notice I named no quarterback twice. And those are some good quarterbacks on that list. We did say Aaron Rodgers. Yeah. We did say Peyton Manning. We did say Tom Brady. Now, it's a never say never kind of thing because, you know, the league more and more and more, you know, the rules are changing, you know, and totally making it, you know, a passing league. It makes it easier to do these kind of things, but still that's a really high number, 8.6%. So I think if there's anywhere where I'm just counting on regression from Pat Mahomes, I don't think you can, you know, sit here and just really feel good. Like you're doing an honest analysis to say, you're still going to put him at 8% or 8.5%, you know, touchdown per attempt rate. So that's where I brought him down. Now, having said that, like I mentioned a minute ago, I don't think by any means that means he's going to, you know, fall off and have a really bad year. I just think that it's a really good match, you know, between his coordinator and between what he does really well. I do think Tyreek Hill matters because Tyreek Hill does demand so much attention, and his ability to run after the catch, he's the only guy on the team that basically Pat Mahomes can't outthrow. Right. You know, we love Sammy Watkins, but Tyreek Hill is the guy that, you know, and you saw it last year. Mahomes is sitting back there. He makes one movement, you know, he's still in the pocket, and all of a sudden, you know, he breaks outside and he just sees Hill going and he can just flick it, you know, on the move and, you know, hit the guy 50, 60 yards down the field. So if you miss some of those big plays, I think your yards per attempt is the other thing that's got to come down a little bit. So right now where I've got, you know, Pat Mahomes, if that's where we want to start. I've sure. got two projections done for Pat Mahomes. I have to because I just don't know what it's gonna, you know, what it's gonna be like yet. But I've got Patrick Mahomes, you know, with Tyreek Hill, and then I've got Patrick Mahomes without Tyreek Hill. So with Tyreek Hill, I've got him at 8.5 yards per attempt. Without him, I've got him at 8.25. His touchdowns per attempt, I've got at 7% with Tyreek Hill. I've got him at 6.25% without him. So basically what that does is that's a difference of either 4,500 yards versus 4,700 yards, and that's a difference of 34 touchdowns versus 39. So I do think that Tyreek Hill, you know, makes a difference, even just because he is such an elite playmaker. I honestly don't, there's not that many receivers in the league, honestly, that I think that highly of. I mean, there are certainly several, but he's one of those that's on that list just because of the way they deploy him.
I think that's great. And it's funny because, yeah, I don't have him at 8% of touchdowns either. Well, I have him at 7.9.
But, Homer.
Yeah, exactly. And I didn't project him with Tyreek Hill at all. So I have him pretty high. And it's a good thing to note what you mentioned, because I don't have Tyreek Hill projected into this offense at all. So the question then becomes, how do you have 4,700 yards, 69% completion percentage, and 45 touchdowns for Patrick Mahomes when Tyreek Hill isn't even on the field in your projections?
Yeah.
Well, you know, and the answer for me right now is I believe that one of the things that Andy Reid has always done pretty well from what I observed is being able to use his running backs and be able to use them in the passing game and find ways to create. And I think Damien Williams is the type of back who's capable of getting about five or six touchdowns. I think Darwin Thompson, who really does remind me of Brian Westbrook with Thump, it can get about three touchdowns this year and actually earn, you know, about 100 attempts, close to five, you know, about 450 yards, a few touchdowns on the ground, and then maybe about 24, 25 receptions as a receiver, and about 215, 216 yards. So he's averaging about 9 yards per reception and three touchdowns. I mean, it's a smaller sample size, but that's where I have him right now. And I honestly believe that it wouldn't be surprising at all if we see Damien Williams start to lose some of that. Like, to me, it's like, if you want to, I would be drafting Damien Williams and Darwin Thompson in just about every league where I can formulate a strategy where I like the ADP for Damien Williams. If it's low enough, if I'm hoping Darwin Thompson's rises a little bit, Damien Williams drops a little bit, then you can kind of get both guys, because I think what will happen is one guy will start the season pretty strong and then the other one's going to come on and pretty much take over down the stretch. Like, I think that's what may happen with this. So, but then that doesn't explain, you know, getting nine touchdowns out of your running backs really doesn't explain why I would have mid-40s for Patrick Mahomes. And the reason is I do think that there is a player on this roster who can give you a little bit of what Tyreek Hill can give you in terms of threatening the defense with your deep speed and yards after the catch, especially just great skill at running after the catch. And it's not Mecole Hardman. And it's not Sammy Watkins. And it's not Demarcus Robinson. It's second-year receiver Byron Pringle. And I think that Byron Pringle, you know, he was a guy, after watching him last year, Adam, was one of my top 10 receivers. He was an excellent route runner, All-American kick return specialist, a guy who's excellent after the catch, strong, fast, really can get deep for you as well. And the only thing that was really missing with his game is that, kind of like Quincy Enunwa, he didn't know how to use his hands at the correct time in terms of attacking the ball with the correct hands techniques. And that's a moderately difficult thing to fix, but it's one of those things that if you take the time, sit in front of a jugs machine pretty much every day and work on it so that you're making sure that you're attacking the ball with the correct position, you can learn it pretty fast if you just figure out, you know, if you figure out how to do it and attack it with consistent discipline every day. Well, according to the Chiefs and Andy Reid, as well as Eric Bieniemy and even the receivers and special teams coaches, not only has Byron Pringle, you know, figured that out and has been able to show much better skill at attacking the football and has really straightened out his hands, but he's also really focused on his conditioning and building up his body in a way that you want to see from an elite athlete in the college game to a guy in his second year who's figured out that the season's longer, it's more physical, and that he's still growing and that you can get even better. And you know, now that you're also focused solely on athletics and not just being a college student, you know, so Pringle has really impressed in camp. There's a lot of whispers that he could earn significant playing time this year. When you look at DeMarcus Robinson, Dwayne, you know, you think about Robinson, and he's a guy that everybody talks about, and he had a good preseason last year, but how come he couldn't beat Chris Conley? Mm-hmm. How come he wasn't, you know, how come he wasn't a bigger name? He's like earning this job by default. And I could see DeMarcus Robinson being who he's been for the past 3 years, and Byron Pringle just sprinting right past him for the third role in this offense, and really what could be the second role in this offense if Sammy Watkins can't stay healthy. And even if as the third option in this offense, that's pretty awesome when you have Patrick Mahomes, who's capable of being able to support, I think, 3 to 5 options, you know, fantasy options in terms of his potential. So I actually have Byron Pringle at 52 catches, 745 yards at a 14 yards per catch average and 6 touchdowns. I just adjusted that this past week because while I've liked him, now what I'm hearing out of camp, I'd rather roll into this looking at Byron Pringle as my bargain and my reason why I would support, I'd still have a fairly high projection for Patrick Mahomes, as opposed to some folks who are like, well, let's wait and see what happens with Tyreek Hill.
Right. Yeah, Pringle's a guy that's definitely starting to get buzz. So you're going to have to stop talking about him. I've seen him go in 2 drafts I've been in now. He went with I did a mid-stakes draft a couple of weeks ago where I saw him go somebody, it was a 20-round draft, but I saw someone take him with the last pick. And then I was in a dynasty draft about a week ago, a startup draft. And this was 30 rounds, I think, 25 rounds. And I want to say he went in one of the last five rounds in that draft as well. So it's a name that's definitely starting to get some buzz, you know. And honestly, I did not remember that you had him. I definitely just wrote this down and put stars all around it. I didn't remember that you had him ranked as like in your top 10 last year. So that's even more intriguing to me now. He was more of an unknown commodity. I just wasn't putting, you know, 2 and 2 together, thinking back to last year's rankings through the RSP. So I'm going to have to go back and definitely reread. That's like, it's on my list to do. That's my must-do reading today, as I've got to go reread about Byron Pringle.
I have him 11th, to be technically
okay.
Correct.
But still, he was 11th, yeah, that's...
But he had an 83.65 depth of talent, which means that he was true. I already had him listed as a contributor, like right off the bat. And he had a really strong final 2 preseason games that caught the eye of the staff, but he got hurt and got put on IR.
Yeah, and the way I'm going to think about it from a fantasy perspective for Pat Mahomes is, you know, if you've got Byron Pringle and if you've got hope, any kind of hope for Mecole Hardman, you know, I've been much lower on Hardman than a lot of folks. I like him in Dynasty because I just don't know that I see the Chiefs re-signing Hill. You know, if they're concerned at all about this baggage, I don't know that they're going to be willing to give him a big contract. And you know how the league works. Someone else, there's always someone else that'll be willing if they haven't been officially charged with something. So I think it could be a situation where you see Tyreek Hill move on. And in that scenario, I like Mecole Hardman. But as far as depending on him for this year, I do have my concerns just because he's only played receiver for 2 years at Georgia. You know, he came in there as a defensive back. So it makes me feel better to think that, you know, there is another option that you think highly of, you know, from a standpoint of going back to Patrick Mahomes, right? And what we think that Mahomes can do in the offense. So, and I will say, you know, you made a really good point earlier about the runners. I know, you know, you're where you kind of ended on that is like, you know, there's no way you could justify runners being the only reason you would still see Patrick Mahomes sustaining the kind of production you have him for. But, you know, to be fair to you, when you look at what Andy Reid has done over the past several years, 4 out of the last 5 years, he's been well above the league average in his touchdown passes to running backs. So he is one of the guys when it comes to passing the ball to running backs that he gets more mileage out of them when it comes to touchdowns. Now, more recently, he, as far as targeting and receptions for runners, he's been more right around the league average or under. But a lot of that is because, you know, for the past 5 years, he's had Travis Kelce. And you don't see a ton of teams target super heavily both of those positions. It's usually one or the other. But I think the other positive for Patrick Mahomes is if you look at Andy Reid's offense historically, Matt, his targets to receivers, you know, and receptions to receivers, despite running 11 personnel a ton, is always well below the league average. He's only had 2 years in the last 11 years where his target rate or reception rate for his receivers as a position group has been above or has been above the league average. It's almost always at the league average or below. He's a guy that knows, to your point, how to get mileage through his scheme out of either his tight ends or his runners as a more than just a complimentary way. And honestly, I think that's something, you know, I posted something on Twitter about this yesterday, that if you look at Sean Payton and you look at Bill Belichick and what they, and they're the two, they're the best, they're the two best at this, what they get out of their running backs in the running game without giving up explosiveness in their offense, meaning they still keep their yards per attempt up around an 8 or a 7.5. It doesn't plummet to a 6. Some offenses you see, oh my gosh, they throw it to the runners all the time. It's quarterbacks, you know, panicking and dumping the ball off. Those two offenses we just talked about, and I think Kansas City's would be the third in this tier, they design things to specifically set their running backs. The other one that does it really well that we would have talked about with Green Bay is anybody that comes from the Shanahan Kubiak kind of system. They do a lot of really interesting things that create not just looks for running backs, I mean, wide open in space looks for running backs. And I think it's an inefficiency that the rest of the league is, honestly, they're just missing out on because they're high percentage passes. And all you're doing is you're using your scheme to create more mileage out of those receptions. And those coaches are really good at it. So actually, I think where your head is at, you know, from a standpoint of Mahomes being able to make up some of that differential through the backs, I don't think that that's ludicrous to think at all. I think it could be a major component for him.
Excellent. So let's backtrack to the receivers a little bit. Where are you at it? Guys like, say, Watkins and Robinson and Hardman as a trio, like where do you have them projected without Tyreek?
Yeah. So without Hill, I've got Watkins, you know, my professed love for Sammy Watkins, Matt. So
Yeah, me too.
Actually, sorry. Without Tyreek Hill, I've got Sammy Watkins at 20%. So I gave him a 3% bump from what I give him with Tyreek Hill. So I have him at 17. Hill, if he plays a full season, I've got him at 22%. This is another offense that they don't target any one guy 28, 29%. They just don't. It's very balanced, but it's highly efficient. And now it's even more efficient because what we talked about earlier, Mahomes is making each play basically 2 yards longer just by himself. And then they're continuing to get the run after the catch stuff that they've always gotten. So it's that perfect marriage. But when you look at the next after, you know, Sammy Watkins, whenever it comes to, well, we can go ahead and do tight ends, right? Obviously, I've got Travis Kelce as my lead guy no matter what in the offense. Without Tyreek Hill, I've got him at 25%. With Tyreek Hill, I've got him at 23%. But my third guy in the pecking order, if you're talking about Tyreek Hill being out, honestly, I didn't have a guy that I felt super great about. So even though this guy gets number three, it's not a high target share. I still had it as DeMarcus Robinson. And then I had Mecole Hardman, and I just made a space in my list for Byron Pringle. Still has a zero. He has a zero right now, but he won't after we do the show. I'm definitely going to have to give him some love after I go read up on him. But I, you know, like I said earlier, I didn't see Hardman being able to come in this year and just take over Tyreek Hill's role. There's just too much I think the guy has to learn. I think what they can do with him is put him on the field in spots and scheme certain plays up for him to help create, you know, big plays in the offense. The other thing they can do is still use him to run off coverage, like what we talked about with DeSean Jackson earlier. But he still has a lot of things, like I said, left to prove. So I wasn't comfortable giving him, even if Tyreek Hill is out for the whole season, I gave him 11%. So that's still fourth, you know, in the pecking order. And then I had Damian Williams right there at 11%, tied with him. And then Carlos Hyde at 2%. And then I had Darwin Thompson at 4% of the, so that's the pecking order I have minus Tyreek Hill. How about you?
Yeah. I mean, it's funny because you look at this and I have Sammy Watkins at about 13% of the targets, at 77 targets, 56 catches, 860 yards and 9 touchdowns. I think that he's going to be efficient this year. Robinson, I have at about 50 targets, so at a little less than 10%. 34 catches, 422 yards, about a 12-yard per catch average, and a 3 touchdowns. Mecole Hardman, I have at about equal targets, 50 targets, 30 catches, 390 yards, 3 touchdowns, and then about 24 runs for about 195 yards and 3 touchdowns. So I have him being more like DeAnthony Thomas in the way that after 2 to 3 years of DeAnthony Thomas and the Chiefs, if Mecole Hardman plays the way I projected, it would be like Andy Reid going, we got a really good year out of DeAnthony Thomas this year. So I think he's going to be more like a plus version of a disappointing DeAnthony Thomas. And he's going to be on the track to be Tyreek Hill just yet. And then, you know, I look at a guy like Pringle, and I talked about where I have him. So then looking at Travis Kelce, I have him at 150 targets, 103 catches, 1,336 yards, close to 13 yards per catch, leading the team in touchdowns with 12. They still haven't thrown the ball up for grabs with him in the way that you would imagine him to be able to do, or when Nick Foles was on the team temporarily and he did it with Kelce. I think Mahomes has done it more, did it more last year, but I think they'll have some design fades and some things that show that kind of rapport that they really have. And we may see Kelce have a banner year yet again. Looking at the backs, you know, I have about 150 carries for Williams at a really healthy average right now. I'm probably going to have to adjust this because I have him at, you know, like Bo Jackson, like yards per attempt right now. But he's at about 816 yards, 10 touchdowns, 64 catches, 454 yards, about 7 yards per catch and 6 touchdowns. So I'm looking at 16 total touchdowns for him. But I don't – that – my projection for Williams is higher than what I really believe he'll be at this stage. That's one that's probably going to change because I just think about Carlos Hyde last year. And he still looked like a good back to me. It's just that Cleveland was a mess before they traded him. You know, you've got two coaches who fought more than like, you know, matriarchs of opposing families in a soap opera. You know, and they were like, you know, so he really didn't have a shot. Then he got traded to Jacksonville when Blake Bortles was already pretty much gone from being the starter, and he didn't have an offensive line when he was playing because those guys were all hurt. So I think Carlos Hyde's the type of back that could push Damian Williams a little bit more, even though they're saying Williams is the guy for them right now. And if Williams gets a little banged up, I wouldn't be surprised if that happens. But then there's, of course, Darwin Thompson, who keeps making plays. So I have in about 104 attempts, 450 yards, and 3 touchdowns, and again, 24 catches for 216 yards. So it's a, you know, it, like you said, it's spread out a fair bit. It's an interesting look at this team in terms of Mahomes. You know, I have him at 48 total touchdowns, 3 touchdowns on the ground, 303 yards rushing, about 65 attempts. So he's averaging about 4.7 yards per attempt. You know, it's still fairly aggressive for him, but I think it's because I like, you know, I'm not a homer, but I think the big thing is that I like his ability to create. I like his ability to adjust second half. He's an extremely sharp player. And when you get someone who's very smart and very intuitive and then has the ungodly physical gifts with that arm that he has, you know, you look at what Donovan McNabb could do in offenses with the Eagles before the league, Tom Brady-ized the league and like made it easier for offenses to get away with murder against defenses. You know, Donovan McNabb was kind of doing that, you know, during the stages where they were still either making it a little bit harder for the offenses, or it was still, or it was, they were just gradually doing it. And he didn't have receivers to speak of other than Terrell Owens. And speaking of soap operas.
Oh, come on. So, he had James Thrash and Todd Pinkston 1 year.
Yeah, he did. And Reggie Brown and Freddie Mitchell. And yeah, exactly. Exactly.
That's some LJ Smith. So though. I used to like
he
that.
He did have LJ. Yes, he did. Yes. Let's stop banging on the Eagles in this episode, you know, but yeah, I mean, McNabb certainly, you know, with Andy Reid and McNabb and what they did there, I just think that you look at this team and Reid's always had a knack for being able to get players to perform well enough and even get dynamite numbers from their quarterback, even from receivers that you weren't necessarily enthused about. So I'm still a little bit more on the upside when it comes to Mahomes. Obviously not like last year, but not as far below it as I think some are kind of framing that regression.
Yeah, I mean, I still have him in my top three quarterbacks. I just have a tier, you know. So I have him and Deshaun Watson sitting, you know, right next to each other, you know, essentially. So actually, I have those two alone in my top tier, and then below that, I've got Rodgers and Luck and some of the other guys, you know, and they're close too. But I gave those two, you know, their own spot. They're basically the guys that I wait on quarterbacks. So if one of those guys, you know, falls far enough, I'm willing to pull the trigger. And typically it's, I won't own Mahomes this year just because he goes in the fourth or the fifth round, you know, of most right. fantasy drafts. So I, you know, for me to draft him there, I've got to feel more like he could truly hit even more upside. What I will say going in his favor is, so here, Andy Reid over the last 3 years, pass percent when leading 51%, 54%, and then last year up to 57%. Last year, Andy Reid, the Chiefs threw the ball 64% of the time when tied. So that tells you the identity of this team is it's passing. I mean, that those two numbers last year, leading 57% pass and then tied 64% pass, he completely trusts Patrick Mahomes. It's not just that he's a good quarterback. Andy Reid trusts him. He's allowing him. I mean, allowing a quarterback to throw that much when leading, that says a lot about a coach's trust in their play caller or in their, you know, signal caller. So I feel good about Mahomes from that aspect. I don't see something where, you know, they try to change the offense, you know, a lot. They'll have to tweak it based on not having Tyreek Hill, but I still see it as being a team. Last year, they threw the ball 60% of the time. Ran the ball 40% of the time. They led 58% of the time they were on the field. That's one of the top teams in the league. So, and they still pass the ball. So I just see it being a team that's going to continue to pass. And honestly, I think that bodes well for Damian Williams. Because I'm with you, I believe that just if you were to ask me which one would I put my chip on as a runner, I would put it on Carlos Hyde. I think people are dismissing Carlos Hyde too much. All they remember is Jacksonville when he got sent to a team in the middle of the year that stunk. And then, yeah, he couldn't do a lot. It's a bad team. But if you look at what he did with Cleveland before that, and even the previous 2 years on bad teams in San Francisco, the guy was, you know, going back to the breakaway attempt stuff, he's still sitting, you know, at a 5% on those bad teams. So he's a guy that can still run the ball. And I think that does cut into Damian Williams on the ground. And right now, if you want Damian Williams, Matt, you know, I've done in leagues where you're with serious drafters, the two mid-stake drafts that I've done, you know, so far, he goes in the second round. So I don't take him. And it's because now if I was projecting the upside that you have, you know, you've got an upside of 16 touchdowns there. I think you said for Damian Williams, I've got him projected at 10 with an upside of 12 and I've got his floor at 8. Because I am worried about Hyde getting some of that work down towards the goal line. And Mahomes also is pretty savvy down there. So I think it's going to be tough to get for any back on the team to get to, you know, six or much more than 6 to 8 touchdowns rushing because of that. And the fact that they prefer to throw even down there, they throw the ball a lot. So from a Carlos Hyde perspective, I do think it's enough, like you said. I've got Damian Williams at 200 attempts. I've probably got his yards per carry lower than yours. I've got him at 4.5, which is still healthy. I've got him at 900 yards, and I've got him at 40% of the rushing touchdowns. I've got the Chiefs, I give a healthy 16 touchdowns rushing on the year. So that's 6 rushing, but I give him 3 through the air, which is pretty high. I could see him get to 4 there. You know, I've got him at 55 targets, 44 catches for 350 yards. So I'm a little bit lower on him than you, but that still comes out into if you're talking like a PPR scoring format, that's 230 points. He's a solid mid third to late third. If he would slide down into that range, I would love him a lot more, because I think there's an argument you can make for Damian Williams in that offense where you might prioritize him over the guys going there, like Kerryon Johnson, Aaron Jones, Josh Jacobs goes right there. Leonard Fournette goes right there. So there's like this blob of running backs that all have shiny aspects to them, but they also have like this dark underbelly that, you know,
And I think it's going to come down to the offensive line as well. Can this Chiefs team withstand the loss of Morse? And I'm trying to remember the other guy that they lost, but they lost 2 guys along their offensive line. So if this line starts slow, that could be a big factor in how this team performs.
Yeah, absolutely. I think to your point, though, on Damian Williams, you know, I think the big upside for him is the passing game and knowing how much the team likes to pass. But I'd feel better if I thought, you know, he could get to 250, 260 carries, and I just don't see that. So right now for me, he's a tad overpriced, because if you want to take him, if we are talking fantasy and you want to take him in the second round, now you've got to take him over guys like Mike Evans. You've got to take him over T.Y. Hilton. You've got to take him over. There's several guys going right there where I could easily say, you know, I like Damian Williams, but these guys are probably going to score about the same as him. And
right,
I feel better about their likelihood of doing it. Right.
Yes.
Versus I got some questions about Damian Williams. Right. Can he, you know, if he were to fully optimize and realize his role in this offense, he could be, you know, a top 6 fantasy guy. But my problem is it's not just one thing that stands in his way. I see like 2 or 3 hurdles that he would have to surpass to get there. And the last thing is we just don't have a huge track record on the guy. You know, he's never really been a guy that's been asked to carry the load for a team. And so there's the question of whether or not he can do that as well.
Exactly. He's a player that you'd love to see in the 4th or 5th round. But it's not going to happen this year.
Darwin Thompson's the guy, though, that, you know, you can get. I've been prioritizing him in drafts where I'm in a 20-round draft. I've been prioritizing him in rounds 13 through 15. I kind of break down my draft into segments and then I have, you know, here's the guys I'm not even going to draft. They're not on my list. Here's all my guys that in these late rounds, these are my priorities. And I, you know, it depends on how I've built my roster early on. But especially if I need some upside at runner, I'm snagging, you know, Darwin Thompson around there quite often.
Well, listen, this has been great. And I think that, you know, we got to cover two teams, and you mentioned 2 teams near the end of this with Aaron Rodgers and Andrew Luck. Maybe we can do Green Bay and Indianapolis next week and talk a little bit about them. Or in the coming weeks ahead and do some work with that. But as always, you know, you can find Dwayne McFarlane on Twitter. You can find him at the RSP site. You can also find him at Fighting Chance Fantasy, as well as at footballguys.com. You'll be seeing some of his work there as well. So, Dwayne, thanks a lot for joining me once again today. This was a lot of fun.
No, thanks, man. I appreciate it. I always love to come on and talk football, and especially get to hear some of your opinions. You know, I got Byron Pringle now on my board.
Well, it'll be fun to see whether that actually pans out or not, but it's, you know, we got a long way between now and training camp. And I just want to give a special shout out to Rick Goreski, who hosted me in Milwaukee. And then for the Arm of Milwaukee presentation that I did, I got to see some familiar faces and some folks who were subscribers attending. I really appreciate you guys coming out, as well as the, you know, the members of Milwaukee Arma who were there to actually listen to a lot of the non-football stuff that I talked about in the beginning of the presentation. And then also just an awesome time getting a chance to go to Lambeau Field and go to Green Bay with Rick and, you know, really spend, you know, have a good time hanging out with him and getting to see some of what Wisconsin's all about, including cheese curds, which I have to say, if I'm, you know, I'm not a big cheese eater, but if I'm going to, but if you've never had cheese curds in Wisconsin, then you don't ever want to say anything bad about cheese until you have. So thanks again to those guys and, you know, and to everybody in Milwaukee. And of course, to all of you who listen to the RSB cast, you can check out more of these at on iTunes, at Matt Waldman's RSP cast, as well as Google Play, Podbean, Stitcher, Spotify, and of course, Blueberry as well. And you can check out more of my work at mattwaldmanrsp.com and the RSP Film Room channel on YouTube. Have a good day.